Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission.
Welcome to another Black and a Half. This week, we have the very funny, very hilarious author, Jackie Brown. Not to be confused with the movies or the 70s. Sexy star, but she is sexy.
Wow, that would have been a great cat fight.
That would have been.
Jackie Brown, the author.
Versus Jackie Brown, the actress.
I really enjoyed this episode. This was another Skype one. Our second Skype one that we've done. So you will hear a little odd audio at times.
Yeah.
Some conversation that's a little odd, but she's a hilarious woman.
Yeah, she is side-splitting funny. It's I can't even tell you, just hearing some of the stories, some of the books she talks about, a lot of it based on true factual stuff.
I found her a little motivating.
Yeah.
I get my step up my game.
Yeah.
Get working. She's self-producing a lot of stuff.
Yep.
A lot of stuff down in California. I think this is something they'll all enjoy listening to. Black and a Half.
Black and a Half.
Stand by, stand by.
Hello.
How are you?
Good.
Where? Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can't see you though.
Hello. Here I'm coming in the little box. Jackie's box. I'm going to turn off this other computer here. How is everything?
Going great. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent.
How's the weather out there?
Beautiful. It's almost close to 70-ish.
Lucky.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
You're out in California, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
We ended that confusion a little while ago. He was scribbling with me at this area code. I had to look it up. So I'm just...
So it goes, 1 o'clock my time? And I'm like, I think 1 o'clock is my time. You're at the same time. 2:06 is Seattle.
I see. Okay. Well,
where do you think it was?
I don't know. I don't know. I just see the area code. You know, you see all kinds of people here that, you know, they're from all over the place. So it's like, you know, I'm one of those phone avoiders. If I don't know the area code, it's like, okay.
Do you remember back when like cell phone companies would try to make you switch?
Oh yeah.
Like if an out of area code that was out of the state, they'd say, oh, you need to switch to the local.
I don't think I'm
number.
Old. I don't think I'm old
no?
enough to
really?
Remember that. No.
Oh, God. He's a young...
Well, they did that here in L.A. They, you know, you either in 213 and 323, which is, you know, the cool area codes, L.A., city, proper, Hollywood, whatever. And, of course, I live in the great 818. And then they all of a sudden said, no, you're going to go to 427 or 727 or something. And... everybody went crazy, and we just barely missed the border. So somebody's got it. You know,
yeah,
there was a whole Seinfeld episode on that. Right?
Yeah, there was. I remember that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, probably wouldn't do that now. That's crazy.
Yeah. So which one of you is black, and which one of you is the half?
Can't tell.
No, yeah, exactly. Well, he's like, you guys kind of look, I guess, a little Jewish or something, huh? No?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, look, whatever you want me to be. I'm a chameleon. I'm Old Navy ethnic, is what.
Old Navy ethnic. I'm a Canadian Heinz 57 kind
of.
Somebody told me yesterday that I was a Jewish mother, even though I've had a little Jew in me, but, you know, I'm not actually Jewish. And my husband won't like that little Jew thing, but whatever.
You're Canadian, though?
Yeah, I'm Canadian.
Oh, no wonder you're so funny.
You know? You got to do something to entertain yourself in that crappy weather, you know?
Right.
What part of I can't?
You either sit there and put on pounds or you get funny, you know?
Yeah, what part of Canada are you from?
From Ontario, back in the East Coast, you know. Nice. I have a T-shirt that says I survived the blizzard of 1977, which is a year and a half later, I was out of there. I packed two suitcases, got a one-way ticket, came here, and never looked back. I met my husband 30 days after I moved here.
You met your husband when you were four?
Exactly. You know, but you know, there was no charges because we were both the same age. You know.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. So.
So what drew you to the U.S.? I mean, was it literally the snow? Did that drive you down here, or?
Well, you know, for the most part, yes. I mean, I hated the slush. I hated the snow. I hated being cold. I mean, when I get here and it's you know, anywhere below 50, I've got the parka on in my house, parka, gloves, the scarf. You know, people think I'm kind of a, you know, a moron for that. But whatever, I'm warm. I don't care. But when I was a little kid, when I was 5 years old, I think that was my very first experience with jealousy, was my neighbor Frank, the dad of my girlfriend. He used to come out to California all the time on business trips. And so I'm sitting there. We grew up on a farm. You know, we had hand-me-downs. I grew up in overalls and Wellingtons and, you know, pitching cow shit and you know, whatever. So he would tell me all these stories. So when I finally just said, you know what, I'm like, you know, sitting there goo-goo-eyed with these, you know, this little face going, I'm going there. That's where I'm going to be. And I just packed up. I told my family 3 days before I left. I just said, I'm out of here. See y'all. And, you know, got on a plane and never looked back. And so I've been here, you know, my little excursion has lasted for most of my life.
So has immigration laws changed, or can Canadians just come over and just start working?
Well, no, but I met my husband, and like I said, we, you know, we got married, you know, almost, it was like a spontaneous relationship, and so I've been married now for 33 years.
And you got some anchor babies, right?
I got some babies, yeah. Yeah, they're grown, but they still live at home, so.
Oh, of course. maybe that's why they think you're Jewish.
That's my generation.
That's right. Yeah. No, but that was the whole thing we were talking about. My husband's working with someone right now doing a record, and he, because I feed people, because the studio's at our house, I feed people and I make sure they've got snacks in the day, and, you know, aside from doing everything else that I do, and he goes, you're totally, I would peg you as a Jewish mom right away, so, you know, what can I say?
Nice
57.
So, and so what does your husband do? He's a musician?
He's a record producer, and he's produced a lot of people. He's got 50 number one hits, over 50 number one hits on the radio.
What?
With, you know, George Benson, Al Jarreau. Right now he's doing this incredible record with Dave Cause. I'm not sure if you're jazzers or whatever, but...
I know some Al Jarreau, and yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I love Al Jazeer. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, I'm sure you would.
Yeah.
Al
Jazeer. Oh, Lord.
Wow. Did I see on a biography, did you record something as well?
Well, this is where my husband and I part ways, because I am not musical, but I write.
Did you
music.
Sing?
I sang. I've been writing country songs, which is not his thing, and so I sit here on my computer and get into GarageBand, and I have, I think I have a whole repertoire of four guitar chords that I know, and so every song is interchangeable, you know, it's like play that one first, play that one second, then turn it around, and I got a whole new song. So it's me and GarageBand, it's my new love, but actually I just sent one of the songs that I wrote up to the lady who owns the, used to be the Wave in Canada, but now it's the, it's a country station. Hello. So she's actually going to put me on to some leads for it. So, you know, I'm not a singer. I'm not a guitar player. I just like to try everything. And I am. I'm going to try once I rework and figure out what the hell a bridge is and and actually be able to play the guitar fast enough. I can only play sing as fast as I can play, which is really bad sometimes. So, but I'm going to try and record a song and put it up on iTunes. And you know what? Why not?
Hell yeah.
Why not? I don't know why. Five cowboy hats up there and upstairs and my old, you know, shit kicker boots I got. And I'm going to do a video.
I'm a little surprised in that I don't know why I didn't really picture Canada to have a country music scene for some reason. I mean, I know Shania Twain's from there, right? But I don't picture people in 10-gallon hats.
Yeah.
Well, running around on Ontario.
Or they're 5-gallon hats, but it's America Light.
Black is a 10-gallon hat.
Yeah. It's a little no, there it's a huge audience for country music up there. There's tons of giant venues for the concerts. My sister and her husband are enormous fans. They go to every concert that's up there. So.
Right. Anytime I think of Canada, I think of wrestling and hockey. I don't know why. Those are my...
Bret Hart.
There you go.
Yeah, Bobby Orr and all those guys.
Yeah, Chris Jericho and all them, yeah.
Are you a hockey fan?
No.
No? So not every Canadian's a hockey fan?
No. No.
Oh.
My dad took me to a hockey game when I was about, I don't know, I was too short to see over the next chair. That's how small I was. So it really wasn't a great experience. There was an enormous man sitting in front of me, and I kept getting yelled at for trying to stand on the seat just to, you know, see around this guy. So it kind of turned me off hockey.
Yeah, that'll ruin anybody's.
Yeah. But we did play. We played Creek hockey.
Oh, so nice.
In fact, the hockey stick saved my life one time because me and my neighbor, Dougie Whitwell, it's really funny because I just caught up with Dougie on Facebook and he still lives at home and still on the farm. And wow, I mean, that was like a flashback in time. But anyway, we were playing hockey and the ice broke and I fell through. Oh. And I held on for dear life because my hockey stick went across the hole. And then little Dougie saved my life.
Wow.
That's a movie moment.
Yeah.
There.
Huh. You know, it's like, whew. It was cold, too.
God, I would never want to play hockey after that or watch any of that shit.
Do you play hockey?
Well, I used to play on, like, rollerblades when it was, like, the 90s, uh-huh. When Mighty Ducks 2 was out. That was kind of my thing. So, but I was scrappy. That was all right, you know. I was the only black kid playing hockey.
Yeah. It's kind of like black country singers, you know, they're rare.
Exactly. Darius Rucker, and I think that's it, huh?
Yeah. It's kind of funny.
Yeah.
So we were showing Manny your portfolio of work on Amazon there.
Yeah.
So which is your latest book that's out?
The latest one that's actually out is The Maze, which is a self-help book. And it's, you know, it's really kind of crazy because people don't buy books, physical books anymore. It's all downloads. And so... what was kind of interesting was that I had to write two books to make this book be available for everybody because with the download, the paperback has an actual workbook space in it. So you can actually write in it like a diary. And it's about working out all the crap that holds you back and all breaking your bad habits and everything else. And it's actually done really well. But then on the digital download, obviously, you're not going to, you know, here, take a little pen right on your Kindle, you know, because you can't do that. So I had to create a separate little, it looks like my big book had a baby because it's pocket size and it's just the workbook portion, you know. And then this other book I just, you know, wrote in a contest in November. I don't know if you're familiar with NaNoWriMo.
Yeah, that's how we connected, actually.
Oh, okay.
Our mutual friend Laura connected us, and then I was doing it, and I got sick. And then,
oh, sure.
I did!
I used that excuse 3 years ago. I'm out of estrogen! And it's all gone. Well, I did. I tried it a few years ago, and I, right in the middle of it, I'm going, and that was really before I kind of got rolling on just writing every day, and I just went, oh my God, why stress yourself out like that? you know. It was just horrifying. So I felt like a total failure. And then I thought, you know what, I'm just going to write these books. And I write really fast anyway. So I decided this year to do it again. And I was just paralyzed with fear, of course, that I'm not going to make 50,000 words is a lot to write. It's a lot to write. You know that. So, and that's novel length. So I just thought, okay, I'm going to just start this out. And I had to get between 5,000 and 10,000 words a day in, which for most writers, if you get 1,500 words in a day, it's pretty amazing. That's a, you know, stand up act there. You know, it's crazy. But I, working under the, low estrogen factor and limited alone time in my house, since my husband works here, my kids both live here, I homeschool my oldest son still. I write between 3 o'clock in the morning and say 6:30, and then I would come back and somehow, I don't know how I managed it, I finished writing almost 63,000 words in 15 days. 15 days. I was so shocked. I'm like watching the words count and I'm going, am I just like sitting here typing the same letters or what? You know, and it's really cool because I've got the book out. I always create an actual physical book on Amazon and order them for myself. And so I have beta readers out there right now and my daughter's one of them and she just came busting out of her room the other day and she was just pissing herself laughing. And I'm like, what? What is going on? Because she's, you know, kind of stays in her room most of the time when she's not at work. And she's going, oh, my God, I'm reading your book. It's like, you know, and I just did a post on Facebook and she thinks it's the funniest thing she's ever read. And she's only ever read one other book. So I don't know where it falls into, how good is it or whatever. But it is a really, really interesting, cute story. I don't write as myself. I'm not a person in the book. I'm writing as a male dog. I'm a male dog, and it's my memoir. And I have spent plenty of time, much to my husband's approval, crawling around on the floor with my dog, watching what he does and looking at him when somebody, you know, or looking at people that are talking to him and kind of really trying to get into his head. Even though the book dog is not really my dog. He's a little bit more, I'm a golden retriever. He's on the working cover. And, it's, I think, a little bit more of a scrappy dog, you know, who's really thrilled to have kept his family jewels for many years. So, yeah, and I don't know. I just, if I'm not writing, I don't feel like I'm breathing.
When did you get your start with, like, writing? I mean, has it always been something that you've done, or did you, like...
I have written my whole life. Even as a child, I used to write this very, you know, where I grew up, my father was kind of a dick. you know, when it just was tough. And so a lot of my early writing was very dark, very, very dark. My daughter loves it. She says it's like goth writing. I used to have, my mother was a milliner's. So she made hats, and she would have these giant hat boxes that were the size of like a desk or something. And I would fill those with these little notes. And then when my parents got divorced, it got really ugly, and my dad took everything and bonfired it. So I lost all of that. And so I really started writing because, you know, we didn't have therapy back then. You know, you can go out and talk to a cow or while you're sapping a tree or something, you know. I've always written, and you know, my daughter had a little bit of an issue, and I started chronicling. It really was my journal because I need to get stuff out of my head. I can't keep it in, or I just implode. So I just started journaling this, and it sat there, and it sat there, and it sat there, and you know, I would go to some of these meetings, and I'm like, going, man, that's just, you know. This is bigger than us, way bigger. And so I ended up putting that out as a book called Dancing with the Devil. And it really was literally every thought that was coming out of my brain at the time, wherever I was. And it looks like prose, but it's really not. You know, it's a really easy book to read. You can sit there and read the whole thing in one day. But then, you know, all of a sudden everything changed, and my daughter was fantastic, you know, through lots of struggle and you know, all of that stuff. And so I thought, okay, now my daughter's great and I am screwed up. Now, okay, it's like physician, heal thyself, right? So I just started writing this other book, and it was really, I also was mentoring a lot of other parents that have addiction in their family, and I just saw that there was such a huge need, and there's very few books out there. I mean, you know, you've got all your 12 steps and this and that, and, you know, it wasn't for me, and so I write everything, and that's how I fix myself, you know, and really start paying attention, taking a look. So that's how Recovery's a Bitch, as if menopause alone wasn't bad enough. That's how that was born, because I was right in the throes of menopause and literally out of estrogen, out of my mind. I, you know, walked around at night with a pillow in my hands going, okay, just one of you, one peep, and you're out. So I wrote this book just sort of as a means to open up other mothers, especially. I mean, I think it's, you know, when you deal with an issue like that, men have a certain way of, it's not really denying it, but it's keeping it in its place. And, you know, for women, anyway, they all needed something. And it went to number one on Amazon for a little bit. And so I every so often, I just keep putting it up for free, because it's really, that book is really not about the money, although it'd be fantastic, but it's really about the message. And it's just such an ugly, ugly place to be when you're a parent. So I think that has been my lot in life, really, is that I'm kind of like a service dog. You know, my journey is to go out there and help other people to see that they don't have to stay there. You know, they don't have to stay in that place, because a lot of people do, and it ruins their lives. It ruins their marriages, ruins their family. That book happens to be written with a great amount of humor surrounding a really serious subject. And so I think that's why it's very accessible for a lot of people, even men, you know, that have read it have said, wow, you know, that's great. Don't let me run into you when your estrogen's low, though. You know, stay the hell away from me. But,
How many books then? You do both fiction and self-help or memoir? Or
I've never done fiction until the NaNoWriMo book. And that was also a huge challenge, just creating this thing out of my head. I do self-help. The first two books were to get rid of my garbage in my brain. That's what led me. I was always a very funny person, always.
Yeah.
And lost that in that time frame of what we were going through. That completely dissolved. I was just miserable. And that's when, once I kind of got my mojo back, that's when I did Bitch Please, which is, it's kind of written like a stand-up comedy, you know, and it's just little stories about my life and, you know, my marriage and you know, like bladder leakage and, you know, pissing down your leg when you start laughing, whatever. I mean, it's real. It's a real book, real stories, and it also did really well, and, you know, people laugh and read it out loud to other people. So that's really a thrill, you know.
Yeah.
And that really was my perfect healing for me.
Yeah, it was amazing reading the other reviews on that, because it was like 5 stars across the board on Amazon. Everybody was loving it and, you know, just, you know, recommending it to everybody. So we can definitely pick it up on Amazon. Would you be able to find that in like a Barnes & Noble, or is it just strictly electronic?
Well, Bitch Please. Sorry.
That's all right.
Bitch Please is at our Barnes & Noble. I think you can go in and order it if they don't have it, you know, because it's that was a real toughie, because Barnes & Noble does not carry self-published books.
Mm.
So this, I was beating their heads, or beating our heads together for a few months, actually. I'd go in and say, come on, carry my book. You know, it's really funny. People love it. People call me. People email me. Just bring it in. No. Go back to somebody else, you know. And finally, I got one gal, and I'm looking at her, and I'm thinking, okay, she's suffering the same way I am, so I think I've got it here. And she did. She ordered it. I went. I autographed. It was my shining moment, you know, because I never thought, you know, they just don't carry self-published books. And, you know, bookstores are disappearing anyway, so.
Right.
Well, that's fascinating. Like, I mean, I was trying to imagine if Oprah was still going on, is she going to stop having, would she stop having people on with an actual book? You know, be like, oh, well, this person's self-published. Like, it seems to be this, it's weird. It's this, I always understood as a rite of passage that, oh, finally you get published. But then as we've been interviewing all these authors that are skipping that route and making a living as an author,
right,
without a publisher.
Well,
and then I emailed a friend to say, because she's been trying to get a publisher and been frustrated, and I was like, why don't you just do it? And she's like, well, I feel like I should get a publisher. That's just what she thinks the route is.
Well, that's the dream. I mean, that's the ultimate dream, to be on Simon & Schuster or Penguin Books or Harper Books or whoever. But if by chance your book is a hit on Amazon, you get to make all the money. You know, when you have a publishing deal, they make all the money and you get the little tendrils. You know, there's no big advances anymore. There's a lot of big New York Times bestsellers that are forgoing their book contracts and publishing themselves on Amazon. I can't remember which author it was. He's had 10 number one hits, bestsellers. And I read an article on him that he forwent, whatever the word is, $500,000 for two books. That was his advance, plus whatever he was going to make. Said, no, thank you. He, as a test market, sorry, I'm just getting over a cold. As a test market, he published a two-chapter book with a beautiful cover. Two chapters. It's like 10 pages. And he published it for $1.99, and he was selling 1,500 of them a day for 30 days in a row. I'm like, damn! Stop writing so long, you know? I mean, I've got 385 pages in my Nano book, you know? And now I have to write a second book because I couldn't even finish it in the first book. Uh-huh. You know, so I don't think there's anything wrong with self-publishing. I think Stephen King, I think, did The Green Mile in little tiny booklets on Amazon, self-published. And I think he's just doing something else recently that he's self-published. So the stigma is gone.
How many people now are e-readers as opposed to books?
It's funny because I always put out a paperback. And when I go to check the ratings, it's like, you know, 6 million on the rankings, you know, or 2 million on the rankings. Even if my download, my Kindle book, could be at 25,000 in the rankings, which is pretty great. But nobody, because there's only one or two sales of actual physical books, you know, that whole generation of people buying books, they're dying off now. You know, it's like my mother, you know, my oldest sisters, you know, they everything's digital. Everything's digital. I mean, the ratio, I think, is somewhere around 90% of all books sold are digital downloads. Through whatever, iPads, iPhones, iPods, Kindle, Nook, iReaders, you know, there's everybody's got one.
It's really interesting. It's like there's a comic named Patton Oswalt that recently did a keynote address at a festival talking about in comedy, the gatekeepers are disappearing because everyone has access now to their audience. There's people like the Louis C.K., who has been foregoing getting upfront from HBO and published and did his own CD and his own special himself.
Right.
And more and more are trying it, and then they, you know, Louis C.K.'s got picked up by FX, and they paid for him to come do it, but he had already made, you know, millions off of it himself, and it's just, in some way, it's an exciting but scary time for me, like, as we're doing this, and, you know, there's nobody to stop us from doing it.
True.
So there's no quality control either, maybe. But just the idea that...
Oh, green screen.
Right?
It's kind of exciting, just this idea that there's nobody, we don't really need anyone's permission
to
create content and to sell it. But I think, I don't know, for you, Manny, I don't know if you're still there. Like, in my head, I still feel like I do need permission.
Somewhat.
From someone.
I mean,
like, I don't know who.
Yeah.
Louise. No,
I mean,
you can do
whatever
you want.
To say, you guys are funny. You should, we'll pay for you to do this, produce something when we could have our own show online.
True.
For a month if we wanted to. Like, right. We could. It's amazing.
Well, I want to come there because I'm looking at what's behind you and I'm thirsty.
Yeah, I got the liquor cap.
Yeah, he is quite the lush.
Tito's vodka.
Cheetos vodka. Whoa, who's spraying good stuff?
From Texas.
Oh,
that's... haven't tried. Christmas present. Christmas present. And we both got really sick, and so we haven't been drinking very much.
Nah.
We just keep buying it though.
There you go.
Looks good.
You got a stockpile.
Yeah, it's good decoration.
So what's the next step for you? Can you see anything, like, would you ever do, like, a made-for-TV movie? Would you, I mean...
This,
like,
is a section
of
the podcast where Manny tries to get a part in a movie.
In an upcoming movie that you're producing. So.
Well, actually, what we're doing right now, you know, my husband and I shot a TV show about wine and music. And so we're shopping that around right now, and I'm doing some editing and whatnot. But I'm also working on a screenplay that I think is really amazing. Don't they all say that? It'd probably be one of the most highly insurable or uninsurable films because of the age of all the actors. They're all up there, you know, kind of their last hurrah kind of a movie. But my next thing is to do stand-up.
There you go.
Out there. But I want to do it in an arena, a boxing arena, because I can't remember shit. So from one thought to the next. So I want that adorable hunky guy with the, you know, 6-pack, 12-pack abs walking around with that sign that has all my jokes on it. I can follow him and just read it direct. That's the only thing that's been stopping me. I've got books of humor that I've, jokes that I've written, I've been refining, and my short-term memory because of menopause is just like, I literally can't remember.
Here, I would say is you can set that up in the beginning because, I mean, granted, Kathy Griffin, her thing is about writing new stuff that just happened, but, you know, she has a notebook on stage and does it. So I think if you did go into a place and say, look, I got menopause and here it is, I'm going to do this, you can start, you know, open micing certainly for that and even probably do a show if you want. Like, I don't think it should hold you. Like myself, it took me 10 years from when I first told people that I wanted to do stand-up to get on stage. And I just, like, I kick myself almost every day now thinking about, like, why I don't understand. I mean, I know why I didn't at the time, but... like, it kicks myself that how much I love it and that it took me so long. So,
I just got a little kick in the ass from my mother about that because when I wrote Bitch Please, I said, you know how I'm going to promote that book, Mom? I'm going to go out on stage and I'm going to entertain people and I'm going to tell them all my jokes. And let's see, that came out, in April? And so far I've just been writing jokes, you know, and you know, I mean, I kind of play around on Facebook trying to, you know, suss out material a little bit. You know, some people, I'm not everyone's cup of tea.
Which is good.
Yeah.
It's a little frightening. That's why I can't really friend any of my husband's friends, you know, because then they're going to go, you're married to that? You know, but they all love me when they get to know me. You know?
You just need to find an open mic and then you need to set a date 2 weeks and just lock it in. You're going to go do it. Cafe, that's it. You're in L.A.?
I'm in L.A. Oh, there's lots of clubs. But, you know,
yeah.
I've gone to, I don't know.
Quincy.
What? I'll shut up.
Well, I'm D. Quincy Jones.
Not D. Quincy
Jones. Yeah, we have a friend.
We have a friend. He's got a room down there, right?
Yeah, well, maybe get you in touch with Adam Ray. He's in a new movie with Sandra Bullock. That might be fun.
Wait, you think he's... Adam Ray is bigger than Quincy Jones?
Adam Ray is huge out there. He has his name on the Comedy Store wall, so, yeah. Or Jeff Duck. Somebody.
You're an author. You don't even... You
yeah,
have stuff to sell already.
Yeah.
Well, right now I'm reading Judy Carter's book, so... the Comedy Bible.
Oh, good. Comedy Bible.
Excellent. Excellent. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You know, the whole section in there about storytelling. It's like... So now I've started to really refine. I thought I had refined before, but now I'm really refining. So, but I'm going to do that because I promised my mother, I said, before you die, so you better live for a few more years, I'm going to do it, and then you're going to see it. So,
heck yeah.
And I have shot some, and I thought, well, I'll just do my own show, period, you know. And I'm just, you know, shooting little videos here and there of stuff, and you know, I put it together. Eventually, I'll have an entire CD, and you know, and
wow, there you go. I love the ambition, seriously, because it makes me want to work that much harder.
Oh, I'll tell you, you know who loves this? The idea of me shooting my own stuff is because I have a really big master bedroom,
mm-hmm.
and my husband, when he goes out of town, that's when I set everything up in the bedroom and I shoot it. So I got a green screen, I got all the lights. And he comes home, he's going, what the hell have you been doing in here? You know, it's like, oh, well, you know, he brought it from bed. It's like, oh, yeah. So it freaks him out a little bit. He goes, you know, just take the camera out. You know, we're not doing sex tape. It's like, oh, I would have. Yeah. The most I'm willing to do is put little bumpets in my back pockets, you know. Then I peek. They, you know. I did that. I had it in my hair one time, and you know what a bump it is, right?
Yeah, yeah, the hair product.
You know,
yeah.
You have a beehive or whatever, and I didn't want to wear it, so I stuck it in my back pocket, and all of a sudden all these guys start looking at my ass. I'm like, what? You know, because you get older, that shit just sort of slides downhill. And so I went and bought a second one and put it in there, and I thought, oh, my God. I'm like, you know, I've got the Kardashian booty now. Booty.
Yeah. They have a what? They have that other product. What is it called? Booty Pop or something like that, where it's like the looks like booty implants. I don't know. That's interesting.
I've seen pictures of you on Facebook. There, I don't think you probably need much help going on there.
You're so kind. Photoshop Adobe.
I do love meeting people. Well, having people on Facebook that you don't actually know in person.
Right.
That as it was starting to go through some of your photos was like, they're all groups. I was like, which one is?
Uh-huh.
This one's Jackie. These both have black hair. Okay, this one, how many years ago? I don't know. Like, and going through, and it's a process of elimination, figuring out who is the person that you're friends with on Facebook.
Yeah.
I hear you. I've done that too to people, and I'm like, I still don't know who it is. It's like, okay. You know, most of them are like cats or dogs or some, you know, weird thing, you know. It's like little avatars. So I expect them. I'm shocked. We have these Facebook meetups out here. We have another one on February 2nd, and it's just random people that are friends that happen to live out here. Some of us have met and have done these things a few times, and other times it's complete new people that show up, and it is a ball, but it's really funny because some of them, you've never seen their picture. They always have a little icon. So you expect them to walk in this big, you know, and they're an inch tall and, you know, well hung or whatever. It's really cool. And that's Facebook.
You ever met any creepy people on those?
Oh, yeah. I've unfriended a few. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's really funny because my husband is afraid to visit my Facebook page because he goes, I don't know what you put on there. And it's funny because, you know, we have quite the repertoire going back and forth, some of the people that are constant commenters on my stuff. And it goes off sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, out of the blue. I mean, it could be months that my husband's never posted anything on my page. All of a sudden, there's a comment going, "Hey, buddy, take it easy." I'm like, what? It's like I'm going to have to unfriend my own freaking husband, you know, so cause him any undue harm or embarrassment or whatever. So.
Oh, that's the best.
Hey, question. Do you, know how to translate? Are you, what kind of genre films do you like? Are you a sci-fi fan at all?
Not really. I'm total all chick film.
What's your top three favorite, chick films?
Steel Magnolias.
Good one.
I just thinking about it. And Sally Field, she was so amazing. Terms of Endearment.
Mm-hmm.
I have so many of those. It's kind of.
Did you see the remake with Queen Latifah, the all black one of?
Joyful Noise. No.
No. It was with Julia. The original was with Julia Roberts, and.
Just remember, I have short-term memory loss, so don't ask me questions.
Are you making up a movie? Like
No. It's the one where the girl has cancer in it. It takes place at a beauty shop. It's Julie Roberts.
Oh,
it was like,
yes. I know what you're talking about. I do love that. That movie was great. I know exactly which one you're talking about.
Steel Magnolias.
Well, she just mentioned that, yeah.
That's the first thing out of my mouth. Who's not paying attention here, damn it?
I was thinking like chicken. Well, they did a remake with Queen Latifah.
Queen Latifah, that's right. Yeah, they did.
And it was all like this all-star black cast. It was really interesting. But
you really can't compare to the original, though. That was such a great movie.
Yeah.
But when you make it black, it's better.
You never go back.
Right.
Or you end up a single mom.
You can't use your same joke.
Yeah, I know. Each
exactly.
Podcast. Each podcast, same joke.
This isn't that.
Oh, funny.
Well, so you have no feelings whatsoever about J.J. Abrams taking over Star Wars?
No. I say
does anyone in your house care?
And have what?
Does anyone in your house care?
Probably my son, or I don't
bring
care
him
who makes it, just once they can go see it. You know?
That was the big news of the day yesterday,
I saw that.
Yeah, you probably, all over Facebook.
Hmm.
So I was excited to talk about it today, and I didn't know if you listened to Star Wars, or watched Star Wars.
Silas is bummed.
I'm bummed. I was like, I wanted to hear your, because you're, here's the thing, like, when someone's really funny, because I wanted to have you on for so long, like, once I was reading her post, and I was like, she's hilarious, we gotta get her on, and so I was like, oh, I hope they're into this, so I can hear their thoughts on it, because it's gonna be hilarious.
Well, let me ask you this, you probably saw the original Star Wars movies.
I'm a big fan of all original films. When it starts going on to 425, you know, kind of lose me. But yeah, I love the original.
Yeah, I feel like it just gets too much. I mean, sometimes you just need to let a good movie die. You know, it's like
even Shrek. That's one of my favorite things. The first one, I just was like, oh my god, this is dynamite. And then there was Shrek 2, and I'm like, okay. And then Shrek 3, and I'm like, doesn't anybody ever die? You know, it's crazy.
Oh, so true.
Yeah. But, you know, speaking of sci-fi, though, as much as I don't like it, I have a guest room in my house. I don't like it. I like it. It's just not my, I watch it, I whatever. It's not my first choice. I have the most bizarre dreams because, you know, I get up in the middle of the night. I start writing around 3 o'clock in the morning, sometimes earlier because everybody's asleep. It's quiet. But sometimes I get so tired by about 5:30, I crawl into my guest room, and it's just jet black in there, so it's like night. And I have the weirdest dreams in there. And nothing normal. Nothing normal. No sex dreams, no, oh, I won the lottery. The last dream, I actually had to get up and write the whole story down, and it's currently under the premise called Skinners. And it's about this whole society that has been given the skin that they can become part of the wall instantly, or they can be lay down on the grass and be the grass instantly because there's aliens attacking and it's the only way to hide. It's really great, and I'm really going to have to write this as a screenplay, or at least the treatment, and try to get it. Now that I've given the whole damn story away.
That sounds like a part I would be perfect for, by the way. I was an actor before a comedian.
So was I. As a matter of fact, that was what I read in the news. Michael Winner, the director of all the Death Wish movies with Charles Bronson, he just died. I worked on one of those movies with Michael Winner. I was playing, back in before Children, that's what I did. I was an actress. I was almost a Charlie's Angel, you know. Jack Smith and I were like twin sisters at the time, you know. I still got the same haircut from then, back in my 20s. I had auditioned for Flashdance, and I'm not a dancer, but if I, like, pretend I'm having a seizure or something, I look great on the dance floor. Clothes start coming off, and I can, you know, do anything. And I went to a lot of callbacks. I went to even network on that, and, you know, obviously I didn't get it. But, you know, I wore the hell out of that torn-up sweatshirt, I must say, for a long time. But, I did a lot of acting. I bought my first house on residuals from commercials. You know, apparently I was the perfect Spanish-looking woman, so I worked in Mexico City a lot. Did a lot of commercials down there, a lot of print ads, point-of-purchase things. And it's really funny because they don't allow you to speak on TV down there, even if you have lines. You know, someone's going to lip-sync you. And I'm in there trying to do my best Spanish for this makeup, you know, and I'm like, oh, Luis Dacier, que me prefiere sin maquillaje hasta que yo descubra el fresh cover. And like, the head of this company is sitting there looking at me going, she's talking French? You know, because I couldn't get the accent down. Anyway, I finally just counted out, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, you know, do that trick. And then they give me this woman's voice. Well, she became the voice that I always had. And I remember the first time I did a sanitary napkin thing for them. Here you can't have any reddish color in your nails or your blush or your hair or your clothes. There I am with nails out to here that are literally blood red, holding a pad next to my face going, con lips, pero te amiro pa intima. The woman's voice sounded like an old Brenda Vaccaro. I'm like, that was the voice I got stuck with for all these years. It's great, you know. I was like, yeah. Oh.
I love the story of the Canadian moving to Los Angeles to become an actor and goes and works in Mexico.
Yes.
There you go. There you go. It was fun. I got to go all over Mexico. Even had a little monkey run up my skirt one time. Nobody could find the monkey, and I wasn't about to say anything because it was like, hey, you want a monkey around? Go.
What advice would you give to Manny wants to, go pursue? He always wants to do film or commercial.
Yeah, stuff. Eventually. I mean, I'm still working on trying to get my solid hour of comedic material. So.
And he's up to 3 minutes. So what, in the meantime...
Sex life.
Right. I'm getting better.
I don't think he needs to get an hour in order to go and start being a movie star.
Well, no, not at all. I mean, just as far as... So, I guess, where did you start when you first started acting? Like, you just kind of went for it or just went on casting calls? Did you get an agent?
When I first got here, I ended up getting signed by Wilhelmina, which is a pretty big modeling agency. And then they opened up... It was all print, you know, so I went all over the place doing print work. And then I went to Europe and did 3 or 4 months print and came back. And by then, they had opened up a commercial department, so then I was getting booked on commercials. And then I started doing, you know, just the beautiful brunette parts where, you know, you don't speak or you just sort of show up and, you know, look good. And, you know, you just, you do have to have an agent. But you don't have to be a member of the union anymore, strangely enough, to get a lot of work because my son, who is just gorgeous, he has an agent, but almost all castings that come into them are non-union now. There's very few commercials that are SAG, AFTRA, whatever, you know, and it's the whole structure of it's changed. The buyout thing, you know, they never used to do that, where we're going to give you $5,000, we're going to use this for the rest of your life, you know, so, you know, there's just things you have to be careful with.
Right.
But you could do it, you know, get on a casting board and look for the parts and submit yourself.
Cool.
You know?
Thank you.
And get up on the stage.
Very true.
Comedy, and somebody will see you.
There you go.
I want him to get going so I can manage him.
Yeah, well.
I'm too old.
Yeah, listen, he waited 10 years. Oh, you're too old. Jesus, what are you, 12?
He's like 57.
I'm 38 now. I turned 39 Wednesday.
Wow. Wow, happy birthday.
Yeah, it's all downhill for him.
I know. So I've got 1 year left of 30s.
I look a day over 55, right?
You don't look a day over, like, 32. So, yeah. So you definitely need to be acting again and doing comedy. So we can ride your coattails. It'll be fun.
So.
But yeah, that's our goal. Ride coattails.
That's all we want
to
do.
It's a lot easier just to meet people than to actually work.
Exactly.
Well, we want to do we're going to start doing some sketches. Well, you know, in February, I think we're going to start shooting them. I keep wanting, you know, I've always held off on stuff until feeling like, well, I need the right equipment or I need the right whatever. And lately I've been I don't have time to wait anymore. We just need to start creating and then we can improve as it goes.
Know what? You're going to have to read. I started a book yesterday and I said on Facebook I was going to write a book in one day, and it's about happiness and how to get it and how to hold on to it and not let it sabotage you. And the working title is, put away your parachute and grab your party pants, you know, because it's time to be happy. And so you should take that advice. You're still holding on to the parachute, you know. Jump in. The worst thing can happen is you drown and then you get resuscitated. And, you know, it's all trial and error. I don't ever let that stop me. My husband thinks I'm nuts trying to put a song on iTunes to compete with people. I'm like, I'm not competing. I just want to do it.
Exactly.
And I have the ability to do it. So do whatever you have the ability to do. Don't let your fear rob you of something that could just be hilarious and fun just for that reason only.
Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting, the competition idea, because I was just telling somebody, somebody had brought up about comics in the area, and somebody said, well, you know, because we're all in competition with each other.
Right.
And one thing I said was, I think that's a matter of perspective, because we're all so different.
Absolutely.
And our comedy is different that it's not really about being in competition with each other unless it's a competition. You know, we're all going to probably succeed based off of the uniqueness that is us, and not like it's not me and Manny competing against each other for the role of the colored nerd in Seattle. We both bring something very different and unique to it. And so I don't think it is a competition, and so much more there needs to be collaboration. But I think people get caught up that they are competing. But I'm not competing against the short little Mexican girl. Like, we're not. People are going to see us completely different. So there's no reason to say we're competing for the same slots. We aren't. We're not all going to get booked on the same show, but that's not... It's not a competition unless you make it one.
Absolutely. I think it's more about camaraderie anyway. I mean, you know, sure, you see somebody that you think is hilarious and you're going, like, oh, I wish I was like that or whatever. You know, I mean, that's just normal stuff. Who cares?
Yeah.
You know, but I don't think it's as, I mean, I haven't done it yet, but I don't think that it can be as bad as some people have said. You know, it's like, you know, I just believe that, you know, your thing is your thing. You know, I mean, another reason why I haven't done it is because I've gone to some of these comedy clubs and I watch them doing, and I don't know if that's the open mic or it's just a pre-show where they're working out their jokes.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there and there's a bunch of, you know, 18, 19, 25-year-old guys sitting there, and I'm sitting there talking about my menopause. It's like, hello, this is not going to fly. So that's kind of what has put me off. So now I figured out another plan to circumvent that and we'll see how it works.
Here's the thing. I guess one thing that was told to me again and again was it's all about, like, I have a lot of stuff about
all
my
about
daughter.
You blow. Let's face it.
No, all right. I have a lot of stuff about my daughter, and I would go to these bars that are a bunch of 21-year-olds who don't have a wife, they don't have kids, they don't have responsibilities, they don't have jobs. And I felt like, wow, I just do not relate to any of them. And in some ways, it did help me in that I had to make my joke so tight that they related to it and they found it funny. Like, to bring them, learning to bring them into my world and to see my point of view.
Right.
And then, so that has helped a bit. And then also just not giving a shit what they think has helped tremendously.
Agreed.
Yeah. I'm old enough to not give a shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
biggest to comedy, I think, probably don't join a Facebook group of comedians.
Yes.
That's the best thing.
Yeah. Stay away from those.
Soul sucking vampire comics.
Yeah.
I got a few groups that I'm in. It's kind of funny.
Do you have like any author groups? Like, are there any authors you hate, and then like, are there any that you love?
One of my favorites, and she, you know, probably most mainstream people may or may not have heard, is Abigail Thomas. And I like her writing not only because of the great story that she tells, but the way she writes. She uses all these really tiny little sentences. You know, there was a dog. He was watching the squirrel. You know what I mean? I'm so ADD. That works for me because I don't have to stay on a whole sentence, you know, that's going around the corner. It's like, oh, right. Yes, this is written for me. She has a great book called A Three Dog Life, and it's basically a memoir. And, you know, it's even Stephen King says it's the best memoir he's ever read. It's fantastic. I like a lot of different authors. You know, I used to be a big Danielle Steele fan. That goes right along with the chick films. I like Patterson. I love Nora Ephron. I loved everything she's ever written. You know, I'm right in there with her now. There's something about my neck. You know, it's like, that's why I have to have cleavage so that people look there and not at my neck, you know.
Hey, people will stop looking at my neck now, I guess.
You know, I used to be a reporter, and I used to interview, my beat was the cops and courts and stuff, and whenever I had to go do an interview where I really needed some specific information, I would put on the lowest cut top or a white beard and a push-up bra. And, I mean, the girls are like the weapons of mass destruction, as I call them. And I would just walk in there, and I'd be like, you know, like a Charlie's Angel hair flip thing, and go, oh, I need some information. And so then I realized later that I could have asked any of these. They would have to call me and say, I need to retract a few things because and I said, what color are my eyes? They go, I don't know. They're black with a hint of lace. I don't know. You know. So you know, when you use it when you have to, you know, it's like the bump it thing, you know.
That's it. I have a competition tonight. I'm wearing a low-cut shirt.
There you go, and two Buffets.
That's right.
Two Buffets. That's right.
Hey, here's a question. How do you deal with negativity, like a negative review, when you get them on, like, Amazon?
Oh, I've had one. And, you know, like I said, we talked about that. You know, you're not going to be everybody's cup of tea. I use language. I don't hold back. I'm crass, but I'm real. It's honest stuff, you know, and some people just won't get that, you know. That's like the difference between, you know, Laugh America and Raw Dog Comedy.
Right.
And I'm like kind of more in the Raw Dog Comedy area, you know, with my stuff. So I don't really care. I mean, I read it and I went, oh, whatever, bitch. No. No, you're gonna. Not everybody's gonna like you. So.
What gets me is like I'll be doing a show, And, like, I'm last night, like, I'm doing a set, and I'm seeing a bunch of people laughing, but I just keep looking at those two people not laughing, and I get so mad. Yeah. I'm like, why not you? What's wrong with this? And, oh.
You should have worked it in.
Yeah. Huh? Really. Oh.
That's when you do crowd work.
Yeah.
Go straight at them.
I know. I should. Last night was rough for me.
Call the medics, 911. We got two comatose here. Yeah.
No, I had a decent set. It's just I had music. A radio was playing the first 3 minutes of my set.
Oh, yeah.
I was the first comic up. I was at the competition.
Oh.
They didn't know what the hell happened. As soon as I went up there, this radio started. It was up in the ceiling, and they're trying to figure out who's doing it, and I have the set. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Channeling.
Jonas, there's a couple comics that were looking at it, both like, usually people laugh when you eat shit or something, or mm-hmm. something's going wrong, but they were just in such shock of what's going on. Like, this is unbelievable. Like, I've never seen this before. Yeah, but... Yeah, so that was thrilling.
You learn.
Live and you learn. Now I know that this is a possibility of happening, so I know what to do next time.
There you go.
Hey, I have an idea.
What's up?
Want to ask you a couple of questions. What's your favorite TV show of all time?
Favorite TV show of all time is currently The Big C.
That's on, what channel is that on? That's on
HBO.
HBO, that's right, okay.
Laura Lynn, she's great.
Favorite book?
The Pearl. Steinbeck.
Favorite dinner?
My home cooking. My favorite dinner.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I'm going to pull a real Canadian on you. Liver and onions.
Wow.
I can't have it out of the house because they won't even let me bring the liver in. So they think it's for some sort of satanic ritual or something. But.
I'm stealing this one. Favorite curse word?
Fuck y'all. Fire truck without the fire in it. Yeah. Now,
awesome.
You know what? I swear, it's not meant to repulse people. Although my mother goes, "Why do you always swear?" I said, "I don't really always swear." She goes, "Yeah, you do." And I went, "I don't know. It's just like it's a conjunction. You know, it's a verb. It's an adverb to my noun, or it's whatever. You know, it's just, it's funny. I find it funny. You know, so."
Let's see, and then what was the other one? If you had to do one profession other than the one you're doing now, what would it be?
Oh, I think I would be. I really love construction, but I think I'd be a therapist. Actually, yeah. I have something that I do, and it kind of helps people. So. I think that's the, you know, like I said, I'm a service dog. There's people that are meant to be served, and there's people that are meant to serve. Not that I'm, you know, pussy whipped or whatever you call that. I get my thrill from being able to help somebody, to make someone or bring them back up. I like to. They offered me a job at the National Enquirer after I quit the LA Times, and I'm like, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. I like to make people shine.
Exactly.
You know, I love to make people look good. I love to make them feel good. You know, unless, you know, of course, you know, we're talking certain stories. Of course, you have to get crappy stuff, but not go out and look for it. You know.
Exactly.
It's terrible. So I turned that down. But so I've just been staying here, writing. You know, and after we're done here, I'm going to finish this book I started yesterday and try to put it up on Kindle by tomorrow.
Oh, wow. You are a mover and a shaker.
Yeah.
But when it feels right, when I get something, and especially with the self-help things, it just oozes. It oozes. My husband said, how can you write 100 pages in a day or 2 days? You know, I was trying to blow dry my hair today, and I'm like with a paper and a pencil, and I've written like two more chapters while I'm just standing there, you know, with one hand on the dryer, and it just comes out. It's just, it wants to be out of me, so.
You know. Well, we appreciate you taking the time from your novel to, or your book to meet with us here.
Yeah.
So do you have a website yourself to someone could check out?
I do. I'd have to check it out myself to get the address. obviously all the http://. It's JacquelineBrown.com. It's JacquelineBrown .synthesite. It's not very short. SynthaSite .com. And it kind of has all my books and the reviews and, kind of everything.
Do you Twitter?
I do Twitter once in a while. I get so distracted, you know, so easy that it's really funny because sometimes I'll post something on Facebook and I go, God damn, that's funny as hell. I'm putting it on Twitter. And then the same person that made the comment on Twitter is on there go, oh, it's just as funny on here as it was on Facebook. So I stopped doing that, you know. But when I'm promoting a book, because it's self-published, you got to do all your own promotion. I Twitter like crazy, you know, and I target my audience. I'm a scourer. I'll spend 5 hours a day in the morning sitting there looking at, say, celebrities that are my age, and I look at all their friends, who they friend, and I friend them, and then I look at those friends of those friends, and I go through this whole food chain to hand pick by the picture my audience of women who are at my age who would relate to what I'm writing about. I mean, it's tough. I mean, you really got to do the work, though, you know. So, and I have one book out that I don't write it even under my own name. I can't even say the name of it, but it's something I wrote 20 years ago.
Is it erotic fiction?
It's fiction. Yes, it's because my sex life ain't like that. It's an amazing book, and I don't advertise it. I don't talk about it. I don't put it on anything, and I just let it go out there into the universe, and it sells. It's wow. Just, I don't know how people just search for stuff, you know? I also have all these jokes books that I put out, the four volumes of them. I have for years saved every joke anyone has ever sent me. And I compiled them all into these little 100-page books. I just edited for mistakes. I put a thing in the front of the book saying, I did not write any of these. If you claim it, it's yours. Prove it. I will take it out of the book. Whatever. But the biggest people that buy that are the older people. And because it's only 100 pages, a little tiny, thin book, so they can put it in their purse. My mother has read volume one 4 times. She goes, oh, I read it last week, and then I picked it up again this week. And it's just funny, you know, because she's forgetting that she read the joke, you know. So it's like.
and that's under a fake name as well?
No, that's under Jackie Brown. It's just, they're all called Laughing My Ass Off, and it's volume 1 through 4. Everything's available on Amazon, even the erotica.
Nice.
That's something my deepest, darkest secret. I gave a copy of it to my sister, and she said, I can't even open it again after I read one story. It's buried in my bedside table. So I guess it's kind of shocking.
Well, if it's going to be your deepest and darkest, it's good that it's on Black and a Half.
Yeah, definitely. There you go.